Good morning again. I think we can all appreciate the complexity and difficulty of the gospel reading for today on divorce. Divorce is it's a very complicated topic that has many different layers. I also realized that, I realized this during Bible study before this service, that I really picked the wrong weekend to leave my wedding ring in my gym bag. Whoops. Right, yeah. You'll figure out why in a second. But there are multiple contextual cultural issues that we really have to deal with in order to understand really the full weight of what Jesus is saying. And there should be, or the first line here in this reading should give us an indication that there's something else, there's multiple things happening at once. Because Mark, as he's narrating this, says Pharisees came to test Jesus. And they don't mean like give him an exam or something like that. Because by way of review, the Pharisees were not a single unified body of Jewish men who all agreed with each other. And in fact, they had pretty significant internal disagreement, and there were two main kind of schools of thought, and they did not get along. And you can, what's interesting is that we have like other records of what these groups of Pharisees internally would debate and argue about in terms of following God's law and understanding and interpreting Scripture. And curiously enough, like some of the main issues that they disagree over show up in the New Testament, which shouldn't surprise us that much. Two of those being issues on Sabbath and healing, and what is allowed to be done on the Sabbath, what is to be considered work. And it's no coincidence that Jesus gets this question a lot from Pharisees who ask very pointed questions. It's because they were disagreeing amongst themselves. And so what they're really doing is trying to figure out where Jesus, as this famous teacher from Galilee, falls within their camp. And of the several times, I think it's at least eight, that Pharisees ask Jesus to weigh in on a matter that we know from other records the Pharisees would be arguing about, Jesus sides with one camp in particular, one school of thought, in every situation except for this one. This is the only one that he kind of swaps camps. And that should tell us that there's something happening here that maybe we as modern people are not picking up. Now, first off, when they say divorce, they mean something slightly different from what we would think of or mean today. Today, if somebody gets divorced, they're just divorced. They're single again. They're on the market, if you want to go that route. But they don't have to be. They can kind of do whatever they want. In the ancient world, especially in Jesus' context, divorce meant now you are actively seeking to be married again. Like, that's the goal. That's kind of the bedrock of their culture and their society. That is not necessarily the case in ours, at least not anymore. Like, 50, 70 years ago it was. So, if we look, then listen carefully to Jesus' response, I think we, with that in mind, I think we can see some extra things happening here. So these Pharisees approach Jesus. What they're really asking is, all right, are you on that side or that side? And Jesus, of course, being Jesus and a good Jewish teacher will not respond to a question with an answer. He responds with another question. In this case, it's, what did Moses say? Previously, or in other situations, you may recall, somebody says, teacher, what must I do to inherit the life of the world to come? Jesus will respond with, what are the commandments? Like, what he's doing is he's drawing something out. And so the Pharisees respond, or this group in particular respond with, well, Moses said a man could send a woman away and give her a certificate of divorce. A couple of things to notice here. The first is that it is initiated and it is the right of the man. Now, Jesus is going to say something very weird that suggests something a little more equal in a couple of verses, but we got to start here first. Because that's typically how it's done. Like, a man will send a woman away and give her a certificate. And that certificate, whatever that was, basically indicated that she was not married or attached and therefore could be married again. It also should signal to us that a woman would not necessarily have agency. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that's how it is, or how it was in that culture. Which should, by the way, cause us to rethink a little bit of, for example, the famous interaction of Jesus and the woman at the well, who was married, what, 5 times? We tend to blame her for that, but she didn't necessarily have the agency to do that. I think she should be seen much more as the victim rather than the perpetrator. But anyway. So Jesus recognizes that, yeah, Moses did allow that. And he says it's because it was the hardness of your hearts that Moses allowed that. Because in reality, God had this man, and then he split them. And then when they come together, then they become one flesh and they are married, then something very sacred happens. Like, that's how we produce new life, new human life. And I think we should count that as sacred. So typical Jesus, he takes the issue or the question that's being asked and he peels that back and starts looking at matters of the heart. And in quoting Genesis, he then says, what God has joined, let no man tear apart. Now, this is where things get tricky. As if they weren't already. Because divorce is complicated. There are some words that Jesus gives when he says to his disciples, who then ask for more information or more clarification. He says, well, except in the case of infidelity, a man may divorce his wife. And then he shockingly says, a woman may divorce his husband or her husband. In the case of infidelity. And we're going to talk about that. There's a translation issue there that we need to spend at least a few moments on, but we'll get to that in a minute. Because, first off, for Jesus to side with the group of Pharisees that he really, really disagrees with in every other instance, is weird. So in this case, it's called Beth Shammai, House of Shammai, who said that no, only in the situation of infidelity could a man divorce his wife. And it was his rival House of Hillel, whom Jesus agrees with pretty much every other time, who said, well, okay, what it really says in the commandment is that if she is displeasing to him, and he says, and I kid you not, I'm not saying I agree with this. He says, well, if she displeases him, like, I mean, he can divorce her if she burns dinner. Again, don't shoot the messenger. And quoting is not endorsing. So what's going on here? For Jesus to kind of side with this one group that he has almost nothing else in common, it seems like he is recognizing, and there's some reasons for this that kind of go deeper than we frankly have time for, that Jesus' interest is in fidelity. His interest is in fidelity, not infidelity. And he seems to recognize, especially based on something that he says just four verses later or whatever, that divorce will, especially in his culture, basically always negatively impact women. This is kind of the case now. I don't know what the statistics are now. I know like 20 years ago, it certainly was the case. And it kind of depends on where you live. But divorce generally, the woman in the long term will be in a far worse place. Not always. And the systems are changing. But if you lived in Jesus' world and your husband has sent you away because he found you displeasing in some shape, way, or form, your life just got really tough. And it seems as though Jesus is keen on protecting that, which I think is you can see that coming out when he refers to like both the man and the woman being able to divorce. But what do we do with it? Because, yeah, it's obvious through this section and then some other times when Jesus addresses the issue that a case of like infidelity is a deal breaker. That breaks the covenant of marriage. And so divorce it's understandable and it's sanctioned or allowed. But the New Testament writers don't seem it's not that they're not interested. It doesn't seem to be on their radar of, say, like marital violence. And it's just inconceivable to me that in the event where he's hitting her or she's hitting him, for Jesus to say, well, you're stuck with them. That's how it works. Now, there are actually quite famous pastors, John Piper, not to name anybody, but if that name means nothing to you, ignore it, who will say and have said very publicly that if a woman is married to an abusive spouse, that maybe her fidelity to him will be the opportunity for him to see the error of his ways. And I remember, like, thankfully he caught flack for that, gosh, like 10, 15 years ago. I remember when that came out, just going, what are you saying? Because that's just not usually how it works. Abusive people need consequences, not more opportunities. And aside from just physical abuse, there are other ways to harm people. And if that person has supposedly made a vow to be faithful to you and to love you and respect you and live and create a life together with you, that strikes me as violating that covenant. And I just, the Bible's silent on it, but I just can't imagine Jesus and then Paul later saying, oh, he'll stop eventually. Typically he won't. So hopefully you can feel the weight of just how complicated this conversation is. Now, when Jesus says to his disciples, a man can't, or if a man divorces his wife and then marries someone else, that's adultery. And if a woman divorces her husband and marries someone else, that's adultery. Very curious that he gives the woman agency. There is a quirk there in both the language and in like the conceptual world they live in, as well as just Jesus' stated intention. Because Jesus specifically says that he is not here to abolish the law. And he never says, like, okay, these are the laws of Moses that we don't have to follow anymore. He doesn't do that. He will take laws that Moses gives and he will make them more difficult to follow. The always famous, yeah, you've heard it said, don't murder anybody, and I have not. But if you harbor hatred in your heart towards somebody, then that's the same as committing murder. It's like, I totally have done that, like a lot. Jesus will take laws and cut to the heart of the matter to reveal something dark about what it means to be human, but he doesn't abolish them. And because of the way certain verbs are used, especially like in Mark, but then it also kind of comes out in Matthew, it's a long, complicated discussion that we don't have time for. If you're interested, maybe not this morning, but just email me, and I'd be happy to have that conversation. But what certain scholars who are far smarter than I am, especially with the languages, will point out that what Jesus is probably meaning here is the situation where a husband or wife divorces somebody so that they can then marry somebody else. So, you know, to make fun of like my own people and where I come from, and like Orange County, California, it's the classic executive who makes gobs of money and drives a fancy car, divorcing his wife so he can marry a newer model. Hopefully you can hear the sliminess of that. That seems to be the issue that Jesus is addressing there, which has all kinds of implications, because what he's really saying is don't use the letter of the law to break the spirit of the law. In other words, don't issue the writ of, or the certificate of divorce. Ha ha, great, see you later. Hello. That was a little more sensual than I meant it to be, but whatever. It's like, I'm not a creep. My wife's going to kill me. Anyway. And that, I mean, that's a really important point. And this is not the only time that Jesus will address the issue of taking the letter of the law so seriously that you miss the spirit of the law. Because Jesus does two things here simultaneously. He makes a statement about just the absolute sacredness and importance of the covenant relationship of marriage and the fidelity to that relationship. And he makes it more difficult to break that up. But then he also seems to be giving more agency to women. Which has some implications down the road that indicate that there are times when divorce is probably better. Now, when that happens, it is important to understand that sin is always at the heart of it. This tendency of human beings to harm ourselves and others and run contrary to what God has for us and how God intends us to live. And Jesus makes it very clear that this is a sacred union and that we take this fidelity very seriously. That this is not a situation like, what was her name again? Zsa Zsa Gabor or something like that, who was married like 9 times or something. I guess that reference is too old now. Nobody finds it funny. Because I think we can all agree that that's not what God has in mind. God has in mind a man and a woman making a covenant for life. And that there's a tragedy that happens when that covenant breaks up. And at the same time, there are reasons for it. It's always a tragedy. Sometimes there it is. I think there's something also very special. Because, I mean, it sounds like this whole time I've been saying, well, if you have to divorce, go for it. But that's not quite what I mean. Because there's also something very unique and special that happens within that relationship. That it seems like God's intention in that relationship is to grow us as people. Marriage is not for everybody. Paul, as far as we know, was not married. And he actually says specifically, if this is not your calling to be married, then embrace your singleness. Or to put it another way, marriage is not the cure to the disease of singleness. I think that's important to recognize. But marriage, like that living with that degree of fidelity with somebody will change you. Like for those of you who are married or have been married, do you remember that first fight? Like that first big fight? I see some people nodding and some people shaking their heads, whatever. Like just knowing couples and some of my hypothetical experience, I'm going to implicate myself in a lot here. Sometimes the fight is over something dumb, like dishes. And then you realize if you have the maturity to take a step back and say, what's really going on here? You realize that the issue isn't the dishes. The issue isn't like a behavior. The issue probably has more to say about that moment, especially early on in that marriage, that you're kind of coming to terms with the fact that, oh, this is gonna stretch me. This is going to require me to change, and it's going to require them to change. And woe betide you if you focus on them changing. Heads up. There is a certain kind of sacred maturity that comes when you have that realization. When you realize that promise is hypothetically forever, and I would never marry a couple who doesn't assume that this is for life. Because God seems to have designed this bringing together of man and woman to really grow and mature us on a very deep level. And you can see this happening actually within the Hebrew Bible. God will describe his relationship with his people Israel as a husband and wife. And through the prophets, you can hear his own heart breaking for his people and pleading with his people to remember who they are and to be faithful to him who loves him. And in that kind of struggle and trial and a collection of lifelong experiences, It is a very sacred thing that people can really grow and mature, because given the right context, namely given the presence of the Holy Spirit in their marriage, God can make us actually look a little more like His Son. Because if God sends His Son to die for His people, to give His life as a ransom for those people He calls His bride, and then as it turns out, all of humanity, then what we're actually getting is an image of the self-sacrifice inherent in marriage. And for those of you who are not married, inherent in those deep, meaningful friendships, those relationships with family that are life-giving and life-sustaining. And in that sense, maybe marriage is meant to be an analogy of God living with us. Now, just because you do all the right things, you do all the premarital counseling, you go to church together, you build this life together around your faith, doesn't mean that everything is going to go well. Life hits like a truck. I want to be clear, if you feel like your marriage, your life is struggling in that way, like there are resources, we have resources, please come talk to me. And that doesn't mean that everything has to stay the way it is. In fact, it usually means that it doesn't. And that there's still that ambivalence, that difficulty that can come about when somebody is not being faithful to the promise that they made to their spouse. And that doesn't just mean infidelity, excuse me, in the usual way. I distinctly remember talking with somebody whom I pastored. They were both Christians, and she had to leave. She had to get out. And she was staying with, I think, her parents or something like that, with her kids. And she was like, I don't know, should I go back to him? And she explained the situation. And it was a weird moment where me, as a pastor who values marriage and fidelity and to that covenant and all of that, to just say, look, so-and-so, the things that he did towards you are gonna escalate statistically. Please don't go back. And I want to make it clear of that, because divorce carries a lot of guilt, that and the church has done an awful job of laying on that guilt, when in reality it was best for that person. And then on the other side, Jesus values marriage. Jesus values that fidelity, that close relationship that changes you. That doesn't have to happen just in marriage. Friendships can do the same. And so should we. So regardless of where you find yourself, whether you are single, whether you are married, whether you are divorced, whether you're thinking about getting married or getting divorced, or however you find yourself, know that the beauty of this covenant relationship is derived from the unchangeable, immutable love and fidelity and faithfulness that God has for you. And that's where it starts. Amen.